Welcome back to Love, Life, and Legacy, the podcast, another podcast. There's many good podcasts, but this is the podcast dedicated to helping you navigate these hypersexualized times. And today is super cool. I just finished recording one of the most sincere episodes to date, and that's with a young fella named David Hewish, who is on fire right now, for sure. He's on fire for High Noon. He's on fire for helping his brothers and sisters to become radiant. And he is absolutely radiating right now. He is refracting God's love in every single word in this podcast. And I know you're going to enjoy it. We do get into some, you know, details about some struggles that he recently overcame. And it's, I think, really valuable because there's the common things that people go through when they join the High Noon realm, which is struggling with the ups and downs of their own addiction, doing well one day and falling flat on their face back into addiction the next. And so he talks about that. But then he also gets into some much deeper depression issues that he dealt with earlier, less than a year ago. And so I really think this is valuable to hear. If you're a parent, please listen to this, because this is your children. This is all of our children, okay? And if you're younger, if you're like a young adult, this is you. This is your generation. This is what we're all going through collectively. He represents all of us in this episode, but he represents somebody who, through a lot of dedication and devotion and stick-to-itiveness, has now seen the other side of some darkness and is really super, super bright. So please enjoy David Hewish and this wonderful, candid interview laden with wonderful stories. Let's get into it. Welcome back, everybody. So we have somebody here, somebody special. And I would say there's some people that are a tour de force. They are on fire for something. And over the past year, David's fire has become a raging inferno for High Noon, which is cool. Very cool. Absolutely cool. But kind of rare, and we wanted to document it. Because I think a lot of people, to be honest, David, and I will introduce you in a second. I think a lot of people stop short of being fully on fire for something because, oh, this is really exciting, but I gotta go do this. Or they have some commitment that is their excuse for not being super excited about something that they probably should be excited about. So we have with us, I want to call you uncle for some reason, even though you're half my age, more than half my age. But David Hewish, everybody, welcome him to the show. Welcome, David.
Hello, sir. Nice to be here. Nice to be here. I just want to say, before we go into anything, Andrew Love is such a humble guy. And over the 4 years, 5 years of recording this podcast, he has always remained humble. So I just want to spend a second to sing his praises and say that he's one of my favorite human beings on planet Earth. So good job, man. You've been doing a good job over these years.
Appreciate that. And I'm no longer humble. I've decided to go full arrogant. Let's go. Let's go, team me.
There we go.
I'm the best. I appreciate you. You've been very vocal. It's really interesting. You come from a legacy of feedback givers to the High Noon podcast, because your dad, your dad binges the High Noon podcast, and he'll get back to me and be like, so I just listened to 50 episodes, here's my notes, and he'll give me this long list of good stuff and improvements. And I love it, because it's the report card I never asked for, but actually really, really needed. So, and you've been very vocal too about your intentionality with our content, so thank you. Thank you very much. And now, David, so I want to unpack you. Let's unpack you. Let's act as though you are a bunch of laundry in a suitcase, and I want to unpack you shirt by shirt, sock by sock, okay? So that we can understand you as a bit of a case study. You are an anomaly in that you are 8 feet 7 tall, You are a really tall man, and you're really enthusiastic and young and vibrant. But also, you've self-selected to be a volunteer, to be an advocate for High Noon. And it's just, again, I do feel like that's in the air. And people want to, but they kind of stop short of becoming what I would call a super fan. So my tentative title for this episode, by the way, is David Hewish, From Super Fan to Action Man.
Oh, wow.
It's a working, pending title, but I like it. I had to find something that rhymed with super fan, and I think I found it. So let's start with, when did you meet High Noon? Like, when did you hear about us? Did you hear about us before we all slept in your house? Or was that your grand introduction to the High Noon staff?
Yeah, good question. I think it probably was that time that you came to UK and all slept in my house. I think that was my first introduction. And at the time, I was just this naive 14-year-old boy trying to figure my life out. I think that was probably the first year I was trying to take my faith more seriously. So if I recall, later that year, I joined some really good pop workshop, and my faith was kind of formulating at that point. I joined the Chombo team later that year. So that was kind of a big year for me, faith-wise, trying to take more ownership over my faith. But still this young, kind of confused boy in a world trying to figure out, you know, what to do with my life.
Yeah, so I can't believe you were 14. You were a speck. That's wild. And so another, you know, footnote in your history that makes you another anomaly is you are now, at that time that was not the case, but you are now the eldest of how many siblings?
So altogether we are 8 children. I have 7 younger siblings, and it's a beautiful, stressful, but just ultimately wonderful honor to be the oldest of all my siblings. I love and cherish all of them, even though they're probably going to give me an early death, but you know how it is with siblings. Actually,
I have a sister. Yeah, okay. She's a redhead, right? Though, so she counts as 7 siblings, so I will
I'll
take that. But so you, like, you know, you're the eldest, and at that time you're a boy, but you are an incredibly tall boy. I remember very distinctly, the distribution of genders in your family is also quite impressive. There's 4 boys and 4 girls, which is kind of unbelievable. The odds of that are impossible. And at that time, you were all working around a table together. You were homeschooling around a long rectangular table in the most orderly, calm fashion I have ever seen a bunch of siblings sit at any table, especially doing work. And so at that time you were a boy, but you were already the eldest and you were already given quite a bit of responsibility. So has that been a theme in your life growing up, since you're the eldest of a litany of children, that you have been given a lot of responsibility just by default because you're the eldest? Was that expected of you, or is that in your nature to ask for responsibility because you feel responsible?
Yeah, it's actually a really good point. If you think about it, like, what's the origin of my nature of taking responsibility, right? So when I was younger, there was definitely time where I was responsibility came onto my shoulders from a young age, because my parents were taking so much responsibility in our community. They were pastors for like a decade nearly, and my dad was the national leader of my country for a while. And so it was very common for my dad to fly off to a country for like a week or 2 weeks. He would go to Korea, he would go to every European country imaginable. And sometimes he'd be gone for 2 weeks, right? And we're a family of young kids. So, and my mother was almost always pregnant, you know?
Force of habit.
So you would know, having had 3 kids, that when your wife is pregnant, she's in a very vulnerable state, right? And for my mother, she was in that vulnerable state often with my dad, you know, not in the country sometimes. So I would have to become the man of the house, you could say, for a certain amount of time. And I guess in my community as well, as being one of the oldest, well, I'm one of the oldest third gen in my community, but so kind of just one of the oldest in my age group when I was in my smaller community. We had this thing recently where our communities merged together, so we have a bigger community. But back then, she was a bit smaller, and I was one of the older kids. So it was kind of expected that I would take more responsibility at church as well, and that I would help out, you know, supporting holy days and being like the young man that all of the older sisters, the aunties in the community, want to, you know, ask me to help out with things. And I never saw it as a burden. It's just kind of what I had to do, right? So I think that's probably the origin of my heart of responsibility, kind of how I had to offer my service to others.
Got it. So you are at this point, just for context for everybody, this, what year was that when we were in your house? Like 2019?
2019, yeah.
Okay. So originally, I think we went to the UK for the first time because Uncle Dave just was like, we got to go. And then we went. And we ended up, we got to the airport and we realized we didn't have a place to stay. So we ended up staying at Susan's house. What is her name? She just passed. Susan Crosswaith.
Oh, yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And she picked us up from the airport to take us somewhere. We're like, we don't have anywhere to go. So she just took us home. And we were like a bunch of homeless stray cats. And that was our foray into the UK. But it was just, we just wanted to check out the scene and all this. But after we were sanctioned to do a UK tour shortly thereafter, it was your dad that was tasked with us, with taking us around the United Kingdom in a van, which I think is your family van, is it not? And he just happened to have a van for a huge amount of people, and it just because he has kids, so he took us around in that. And so that was our second time in the UK, and we were going on many stops. But we started, I think, in your house, and there's already 10 family members in the house because 8 kids, 2 parents, do the math. And then the whole High Noon staff is like, hey, we're here to stay. And then he somehow wedged us into your house, which is unbelievable. And so that's the whole High Noon team. And then when we ended up in your house, now that we're all caught up, what was explained to you who we were and why we were there? Because you were 14. Was it explained the nature of what we were dealing with? Because this is a big introduction to you.
I think it was quite vague, to be fair, like the reason you were in our house.
Okay.
But then
I happens think a lot.
Being the pastor couple, my parents, we often had people around the house, you know, just doing mission work. We might have some missionaries. We would just, you know, invite blessed families to come to our house. So, you know, when we were told that a bunch of American dudes were coming around, you know, to our house, if anything, it was just more exciting. Like, oh, okay, cool. We don't really know any Americans, or only a few. So it'd be nice to meet some people from our community in a different country, right? And then I guess it was explained to me more directly as we were in our house, like, these are who they are. They are called High Noon. They're here for some workshops. Oh, okay. That makes sense. But then, yeah, I guess, as you remember, I joined the Lancaster Gate workshop that you held in London.
Oh, okay.
And I was there, and I got to see you, like, I got to see you during the preparation process as well, because I was helping to look after Sammy and Yigyu's daughter, Luna. Whilst you guys,
I'm glad you
finished
that sentence. I thought you were going to say I was tasked to take care of Sammy, just, you know, with diaper changes and whatnot.
Oh, Sammy, he needs looking after, man. yeah.
A lot.
No, but I was looking after his daughter whilst you guys were having a meeting in Lancaster Gate, and then I was present during the workshop, and that was my first taste of High Noon, actually. So
you went from zero to workshop with very little segue?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. And so what was your first impression of this content and this whole approach to life?
I guess my first impression was, wow, this is something really needed, like in my own personal life. Kind of, as I said, a confused 14-year-old who had, I would say back then, relatively small shadows. My shadows were not that big, but shadows nonetheless, right? And when you're at that state of your life where you have small shadows, but you're maybe more, you know, naive, they feel like really big shadows, right? And so I really wanted to deal with them in the right way, but didn't know how. I think I only just recently, like that year, opened up to my parents about my use of porn, which back then was not even proper hardcore porn, but just like images on the internet. So very kind of early days, just my masculine, you know, puberty feelings just kind of exploding into, you know, mysterious ways. Like, what is this? What are these feelings I have?
But how does this happen? I just like to unpack that a little bit, because you are homeschooled in a house bursting with humans. So how does it even happen that you, because you have to understand, many, many adults, parents' age people, just believe that it's impossible that a person like you could end up watching porn. So the fact is that you did. And so I'd love to understand, like, how were you exposed, even in an environment that was somewhat sheltered, right? Homeschooling with your family, a lot of accountability, very little space. You guys don't live in a castle. You didn't go to your wing of the mansion to access your own Wi-Fi, right? It's like you're in a house with a ton of people. How is it that you still ended up being exposed to porn?
I think for me, the big word was just curiosity at the time.
Okay.
I think at that time of my life, I was a bit more lonely. I didn't really have many people to talk to on a daily basis. I would say that I had friends, but I would only see them maybe twice a year at a workshop, that kind of thing. And then the rest of the time, I would be around my family. And of course, I had people to talk to, you know, at Sunday service, but most of my friends are in different communities. And so I was maybe in a more lonely state at that time of my life. And so when these natural feelings of curiosity and sexuality just kind of awoken in me at that time, I didn't know what to do with it. And so I remember just being like that kind of person. Okay, so for context, I would normally do my homeschooling by myself, kind of in my own room. And I would have a laptop for educational purposes. And I would frequently just kind of Google random stuff that I'd be interested in. So animals, cars, you know, Lord of the Rings, that kind of stuff, you know. Kids stuff. And then, I don't know, just one day I randomly came across like a picture of a naked couple holding on to each other in like quite a beautiful way. And I was instantly like, you know, a spark went in me, like, oh wow, that looks interesting. And like, you know, when you find yourself not being able to stop looking at that picture, you know, it's like your eyes
move
on to it.
Transfixed.
Transfixed for the first time. And it was quite an innocent photo, I would say. It was like this kind of, I don't know, I think it was some kind of fashion article, and it was like a just this naked couple holding onto each other in quite a, you know, it wasn't terribly pornographic, but it just definitely sparked a curiosity in me. And then I guess over the course of a year or two, that curiosity became more and more of an addiction, because I found that I would get a kick out of looking at, you know, photos of naked women especially. And I would say this was even before I necessarily had like some kind of void I was trying to fill. However, at the same time, I was explaining how I was a bit more lonely at the time. And so, yeah, maybe that just the interest, like the interestingness of these photos and the kind of the new aspect of this kind of, you know, how can I describe it? You know, like, it's not allowed. I knew I was doing something wrong. And so that kind of, at the time, sparked a sort of curiosity, like, oh, what if I cross this line, and what if I delve into this world? You know, it has an excitement aspect to it, right? And so that was probably my first experience with porn was that, like, just, you know, it being an experience that was exciting and nerve-wracking, but at the same time, kind of, you know, you feel good in the moment, but then you always feel bad afterwards. And that was kind of what I came into the High Noon workshop for the first time, having this baggage, like, oh, you know, this is not right. I'm sinning. And you guys were hitting the nail right on the head and going, you know, porn, masturbation, this is all stuff we should be trying to avoid. And we have to be creating radiant individuals and radiant couples. And for me, that was like, wow, this is, someone's actually talking about it. This is a new experience for me.
Nice. And so it was attractive to you, or was it also somewhat confronting and scary to hear, to be at the workshop? Because you know that you're complicit in, you know, some aspect of this whole thing. So then there's clearly ramifications, right? Which means, oh, crap, I probably have to talk to my parents. So after that workshop, and after High Noon is in your house, which is kind of a rare thing for most people. We don't stay in their house. It's kind of unavoidable. We're like there, a clear presence. Mm-hmm. After we leave and go to the next country, I think the UK was pretty early on in the tour. What was left? Was that a time when you started to open up with your parents, or was there a bit of delay for you to process, or what? Because the other thing too is interesting. I don't really know what happens, like the order of things necessarily, after I leave a place. So we kind of leave wreckage in a sense. We, in a good way, heavenly wreckage is we're tearing down the walls that used to exist between people. But, you know, everybody has their own story. So in a unique, you know, turn of events, we are staying in your house. Your dad is very clearly, deeply exposed to our content because we're in a van with him, because he's taking us around the entire continent, right? Or I guess the country for a week. I think we went on 6 or 7 different stops. He took us to some bigger venues. I remember speaking in Liverpool in a living room for like 4 people, which felt really awkward because there was like 4 staff speaking to 4 people in a living room. But the entire time, he was our chauffeur, and he was deeply embedded in this conversation that we're having. So we leave. You're exposed now to this new content. You go to a workshop. You're steeped in it. Your father is definitely steeped in our world, and we have a wonderful time with you. But then we leave. So then what happens next after we disappear in like a flash? What happens in the Hewish household with David and father, in terms of this conversation? What transpires?
Interesting. This is going, it feels like we're going a long time back. Quite a few years ago. I think, okay, actually, so before you even came to UK, I had already opened up to my parents about this usage of pornography. And I'm just out of my own, like, my conscience is really burning me at the time. Like, what are you doing? Like, you know, with Gollum talking to myself, like, what are you doing, precious? Like, you should, you know, except this was like the heavenly Gollum who was like, you know, you need to reach out to your parents. You know, you have to tell them about this shame you're holding. And so that already happened. And that was the first time I received grace. I was really scared about sharing. And then my mother just told me that, well, this is wrong, but, you know, your dad and I, we still love you even more, right? You know, so don't ever forget that. So that was my experience before High Noon even came. So I think it was just reassuring to have even more guidance from the High Noon team back then. But after you left, to be fair, actually, nothing really changed that much in my family. Not much.
That's just a big old atomic bomb to my ego, but keep talking, please.
I didn't want to say it, but I'm sorry, Andrew. It wasn't that much of a difference. I guess my parents were maybe more into educating themselves on the content, and maybe they were more involved. But certainly from my perspective, not much changed. And I think one reason could have just been the fact that my parents were so busy with their mission work, and you know, we were, you know, trying to function as a family. And so I don't know. I mean, I guess High Noon was always mentioned there, you know, now and again, but it didn't become a massive part of my life at that point yet. And
yeah,
just to kind of skip forward a little bit, when lockdown started, you know, in 2020, that was really when the anxiety and the stress really got to me. And that's when I fully became addicted to masturbation and porn. And that was like when I first experienced true addiction, like, you know, not really being able to control myself, and also kind of justifying the fact that I'm doing this because it was the only thing that kept me, kept my stress in order, you know, for a while, during a very confusing time. And then that's when I was, you know, again, I had to tell my parents after a workshop. I just felt inspired. And then they kind of, yeah, High Noon became part of the conversation again. And they were like, well, you know, you do know High Noon have these online programs, right? And I was like, oh yeah, those guys from way back then, 2019. And so I joined an Ascend group. And I'm actually going to be really honest with you. I did not enjoy that program, actually. And I think the reason was I was not ready to grow. I was not ready to get rid of my addiction that had been keeping my stress and anxiety at bay.
Well, so why did you join? Because you joined, your mom said you should join, and you're like, yeah, I should join. And then you joined with no real intention to change. So why was it? Did you just want to feel like you were doing something, but you didn't really want to do the deep work?
Yeah, something like that. I think I knew deep down I had to grow. You know, I mean, I was trying to stop my addiction many times. And every time I'd go to a workshop as well, I'd always feel inspired to keep going. I can never really make it longer than a month. And so the willingness to actually improve and to stop my addiction was there, because deep down I knew that what I was doing was wrong. But a part of me was too afraid to let go of this habit that had been my go-to soothing mechanism, right, for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't quite ready to face my disappointment in myself as well, you know, kind of my feeling of, oh, my value is less because of my choice to sin and to enter the dark side of the dark side of the force. You know, I felt really quite bad as a person. I felt like I was not the person I wanted to be. And so I think that was keeping me from diving deep into my soul. You know, like I didn't want to feel the pain of facing my issues. So that kind of held me back during that Ascend group. And God bless, you know, my facilitator at the time, shout out to Tim Berger, wonderful friend of mine. He really invested in all the brothers there. But I wasn't in the right state to invest back fully.
So this is still during the lockdown. You make your first big swing at, you know, tackling your addiction. Doesn't go well. Did you last the entire 12 weeks, like the entire quarter? Or did you give up halfway through or what?
Bit of both. So I gave up halfway through.
Externally or internally? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's 3 months. I joined the first month, it was all right. And then I basically just bunked off the whole middle month and didn't join any of the calls. I guess I felt too shameful at the moment. I was still relapsing and I just felt a lot of shame. And at that point, I don't think I knew how to receive grace at the time. That was, there was a big blockage where I just couldn't receive grace. Mm. And then I somehow found the inspiration to join the end of the program. And yeah, so I was proud of that, but at the same time I felt like I didn't fulfill I didn't experience the opportunity that the program could have offered. You know, I blocked the opportunity that could have really been helpful.
Sure. I mean, it's quite common. And I do want to just kind of mention this phenomenon that, first of all, like you were saying, a lot of people join because they want to do something, but they don't want to do the thing that they want to do or that they should do. It's like people who join the gym and then they don't work out, or they join the gym and they put in minimal effort. So they're like, but I'm doing something. Why is my body changing? Why I'm not seeing results? It's because you got to really transform internally in order to see the manifestation externally, right? So that's one thing. The other thing is, everybody's on their own timeline. So you joined, right? And you wanted to do something, but there's also still a lot of deep stuff, right? It's crazy. You know that you're involved in something that is hurting you and you don't want it, but yet you're not ready to let it go. So that was where you were kind of at, is you're holding on to a ticking time bomb and you're like, but I don't want to, I kind of love it. It's like my teddy bear, like, but it's a time bomb, right? So that happened during the lockdown. And then you had not an underwhelming experience. And then what happened next? Because here you stand before us, so that can't be the end of the story. What happened? Yeah. So did you feel defeated after that quarter, or were you like, oh, Heinen's stupid, it doesn't work? Because we get that. Like, I've heard that in passing. People are like, oh, Heinen doesn't work. I was like, what are you even? What is that? Please define what you're talking about, because I don't. Meeting in groups and talking about your problems and working on yourself and setting goals, that doesn't work. Mm. So it didn't work for you, but did you interpret that like me, I failed, or do you say Heinen failed, or how did you handle that sense of failure at that time?
Mm. Yeah, I think I only really blamed myself. There was no, I had no resentment actually towards the program. In fact, there were moments where I felt happy that I was in that program, but ultimately I think my shame kept me from truly enjoying the experience and truly growing at that time. And so I think I only really had myself to blame afterwards, which, you know, added even more shame to my shame, and I was really feeling quite low. And I guess between that time, for another solid year, I think it was, I was just trying to work on my own, I guess, and trying to figure myself out and trying to find the willpower to overcome my addiction. But as you definitely know from all your experience, it's not your willpower alone that will get you through. And in fact, your willpower is not enough, right? And so actually, I had Heinen.org as a tab on my laptop for a long time, but I always felt too ashamed to open it and to look into the content. Until the big moment when you came again to UK in 2022.
I just won't leave you alone, David Hewish. We are going to stalk you until you transform.
2022. I'm so glad you did. Yeah.
Oh, 2022 or 2023?
Oh, it could have been 2023, you know? Yes, 2023. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Last year.
You messed with me. That was a rough weekend. I had what I discovered. I didn't even know what this thing was called until I got it. And it's called heartburn from something I ate on the plane, and the entire weekend. Hey everybody, Andrew Love here, and I just wanted to stop and take note of the fact that David in this episode is particularly hyped about the Core of the Universe book, and there's a reason for it. It's a fantastic book. It's got True Parents' Words, and it's got all sorts of ways to experience True Parents' Words through conversations, through examples and stories, through metaphors, but also through real-life examples, through testimonies. It's really remarkable because it allows many roads to enter the kingdom of beautiful words on earth. So if you want a copy of this book, just head over to our website, heinen.org/core, heinen.org/core, and you can pick up a copy there. Soon enough, we will have an audiobook in English, But for now, we have multiple languages accessible in the book. It can be printed. We also have it on Amazon. So please pick up a copy. If you haven't read this, it's not just a book. It's an experience. And we want you to have this experience, ideally together with other people. So pick up at least one copy for you and your couple or you and your family, but maybe get a few. Anyway, back to it. People were talking to me and I just had to go straight like Jedi spiritual ninja and stifle the vomit that I was feeling inside to be like, oh, that's an interest. Wow, interesting. Oh, okay. I'm here for you, you know. But that was, I'm glad it was, you know, helpful for somebody because that was rough. So we came back again. So this is after COVID, you know, the whole thing, the world shutting down. And we go back, we do a weekend, and you attended. And why did you sign up? Had you already lightened up in terms of the shame that you were feeling? Were you already more optimistic that, yeah, now feels like a better time for me?
I'm trying to remember the context of the beginning of that year, because it was quite early in the year, right? I think it was in March or April, that kind of time. So
yeah, March. It was definitely March.
Right. I think at that point, I became close with one of my BC friends, and we were supporting each other in our growth. You can almost say we had kind of become accountability partners before we were even introduced to High Noon. And we really wanted to take our growth seriously. And so I think that year, High Noon came at the right time because I was willing to grow. I was willing to face my shadows. And so as soon as I saw that High Noon were coming to not only UK, but like just 10 minutes down my house, right? 10 minute
yes.
car drive. I was like, yes, totally. I am going. Mm. And I can't think of a more U-turn experience for me in my life where I received this incredible content. I mean, you had all the best members of your team there. There was yourself, Benji, Sammy, all there. It was great. And yeah, I just felt so inspired. And straight after that workshop, I started listening to this podcast, the Love Life Legacy podcast. And it changed me as a person in so many ways, because I finally was filling my mind and my soul with good content. But also, and this is probably going to start a whole different conversation on its own, but I started reading The Core of the Universe. And that transcended my understanding of the blessing and life in general to a whole different level. And I truly had an incredible experience. I had like spiritual experiences reading this book. There were times where I felt God's presence right next to me reading some of the words in this book. And
wow,
suddenly the blessing became something so beautiful in my mind. Like, wow, I truly want to pursue this. And God's vision for sexuality isn't that of shame, but that of absolute beauty. And I really want this in my life. So that was a big moment for me, for sure.
Hmm. Yeah, let's unpack a few of those things. That's a lot of good stuff. So again, somehow we ended up at the Hewish household. Fun fact, everybody. We wrap up this wonderful weekend in Lancaster Gate, right? The beautiful mansion. Livingston House, sorry. So yeah, many fancy sounding names starting with L. And we organized this. Let's go to the Hewish household. This is like a, you know, High Noon tradition. Let's go Shay Hewish. And so we get picked up in the Hewish family van by Padre Hewish, who's looking very dapper. I remember he just looked really slick. He looked really great. And he said, let's go. And so we're excited. I'm still borderline vomiting because I'm not feeling so well, heartburn. He takes us back to your house. Your mom greets us at the door and says, hi, honey. Nice greeting. And is like, by the way, I think our son just broke his arm. He fell off the trampoline. And I was like, okay. And she's like, he needs to go to the hospital now. I was like, okay. And I saw your dad processing All these, like, I was just starting to get excited because the Hainan people are here and I just wanted to sit down, and like terrible timing. But I saw him take it like a man and be like, okay, this is happening and this is what I got to do. So he just looked at us and said, I'm going to go. This is probably going to take a while. It was nice seeing you. And we did not see him again. So call it spiritual, but that was a great, funny note. So that moment was a good time for you. And I would just mention this because this is so many people's journey, is that, okay, your first experience with us, you tried, but it didn't work. Right, I guess, desire, wrong timing. Then some time passes, you heal, you give it another chance, and now the workshop stimulates you in a new way. And now you're much more open and you can see the value on a deeper level because you've been doing more work on yourself. Similar content. Right, we've evolved a bit, but it's not like worlds apart from the first workshop that you were exposed to, but you are now a different person. So you're experiencing the content anew. And now this leads us to, why did you pick up the Core of the Universe book and how did you consume it to get these spiritual experiences? Did you set a condition or were you casually reading it? And this isn't everybody. Just side note, not a guarantee. We do not guarantee spiritual experiences with the purchase of this book. Purchasable on Amazon. Soon out, Uncle David is narrating the audiobook. Again, not spiritual experience guarantee, but if you try hard enough, maybe. So how did you consume this book?
Yeah. Let me think. I think I just read it rather casually. I mean, I'm a big reader anyway. I've read over 1,000 books in my life. And so this is, although most of the books I read are either historical or fiction. So it was nice to pick up something which I knew would be a bit more content driven, something a bit more, you know, it was quite unique as well. Like, it wasn't like our everyday Hunderke books. It's not like the DP or any other of those really good books that I still totally recommend for anyone listening. Definitely read those books.
Shout out to the Divine Principle.
DP, that's good. But this book was special because I just loved the format. I loved how you would read True Father's incredible words that, you know, this is the first time me hearing these speeches from True Father. And then you would get the context of the Wolfenbergers explaining the meaning behind True Father's words and making it more understandable, more digestible, more relevant in our modern time. And then at the same time, you'd get discussion questions right at the end. And so it was like the perfect Hunderke recipe, because I could then, you know, receive the content through reading it and then also ask myself the questions and really digest the content. And so, yeah, as you said, you're not going to guarantee a spiritual experience. But for some reason, the book just shouted out to me in a way which was very personal. It felt like God wanted me to get something from this book, you know? Like, there was a plan involved when it came to reading this. It's not just read this and learn the High Noon lifestyle. But it felt like God was truly trying to make a big point to me, like really banging on my door, connecting to my heart and really going, like trying to open up my heart and fill it with this content. And I don't know, I can't really explain it, but it felt like God wanted me to read this, you know? And that was my experience of like every time I would read it, time would stand still and I would just be transfixed in this world of High Noon lifestyle. And I really felt like this is Chonalguk. This is like the Chonalguk handbook for life. I really felt that way.
Wow. So just so you know, it was such a pain in the butt to travel with those books. So I'm glad it was worth it. Sometimes when Uncle Dave's like, oh, so you're going to bring the books, right? I make a sound that you can only make when you feel burdened by something like kind of something like that. But to know that it is worth it makes it all worthwhile. I almost got deported out of the entire European continent over a banner that we were forced to travel because I was screaming at an airline. Anyway, long story, but the book's worth it. Thank you, Uncle Dave. We're talking about that today. You win, Uncle Dave. You win that war, that battle at least. So now you read this book, you're on fire, you're having these spiritual experiences, and then you start knocking on our door like a Jehovah's Witness, like the proverbial high noon door, and you start saying, hey, we got to do something about this. People need to know about this. People, you start really getting excited. And so what was the feeling there? Like you read this book, a lot of people read books, but not a lot of people do anything about it. So what was the feeling that you were experiencing of, wow, this is great. Please unpack that.
I think reading it, I realized I had been missing something massive in my life up until that point. I had really been missing just the clarity for what the blessing truly means, what God's vision for life really is. And it made me understand my faith on a much grander scale. And suddenly, you know, like, I'm not sure if you've seen that film Oppenheimer, but you know, in the film, Oppenheimer is seeing like atomic science right in front of his eyes. He's like seeing the particles whizzing around his head, like in real life. For me, it was like I was seeing the spiritual science of the universe whizzing around me, and suddenly our faith made sense because of God's involvement in sexuality for an eternity. Like I could see that every Bible story had something to do with sex. Every world issue had something to do with sex. Whether it's war, whether it's education, whether it's, I don't know, the struggles that youth were going through, almost everything kind of, the core of everything was sex. And so it really opened my eyes. And the overwhelming feeling I had was, wow, this brought so much clarity to me. I really hope that all my other brothers and sisters my age could also learn this as well. I feel like this would be really helpful for them to truly grasp the meaning behind the blessing, the meaning in our movement, you know? What's the deep meaning? Not just the surface level, you got to be a good person, you have to pray to God, you know, which... You know, it's good advice, but what's the deeper meaning behind that? So I remember writing that email to you, Benji, and Sammy, just to kind of, I wasn't trying to, you know, break down any doors or anything. I was just trying to say kind of humbly, like, hey, I think people would really benefit, myself included, from having a high noon program where, like, Hundake style, we could study this core of the universe book together. I would really appreciate that. Is it possible? Can you guys do that? Yeah.
I remember coming up with a plan for you, and then I remember nobody being excited about it. So then Benji started coming up with a plan. He started jamming with you, right? And so it was at the core of it. I mean, this intention was that you wanted other people to experience the value of this book, single people especially. And so you started working on when was this? This was probably in late spring, early summer, 2023.
Yeah.
And so you started working on this, and then we launched it in September, right? In the fall. In the autumn. We can't say the fall when we're talking about Divine Principle.
I think our first program actually started in July, I feel like. I was in Korea. I was at the 21-day pilgrimage for European youth.
Yes.
And I was joining our group calls from Korea at like 2 a.m. it was crazy. But yeah, and so Benji came in, right, and had all these ideas, and I remember him reaching out to me and going, yeah man, I like this idea, you know, in Benji fashion. And then he was like, but what I also feel like we need to do is make it marriage preparation oriented. You know, we need wedding prep. And I was like, wow, that sounds awesome. I don't want to ask, whose idea was it to put me in charge? Because that was either a stroke of genius or a crazy notion of insanity.
I think there is no other way. We're in a position where it had to be you. It's called fate. It was your destiny.
My goodness. I was overwhelmed, I feel, because it felt so crazy. Like, I'm just a teenage guy in the UK struggling with my integrity. And High Noon, these guys I've been looking up to and have been learning so much from, they want me to be involved in this program. And instantly my internal godly nature was going, yes, do it, go for it, you know? So I did, I committed. And the program was beautiful. It really made me really happy to connect to my brothers and to my sisters as well. And we formulated a team very quickly with Benji and Samara from Brazil, who's a dear sister of mine, great older sister. And then after that, Araceli came on board. And we became this formidable team that really wanted, like, we all shared the same common goal, that we want to truly help people to have radiant blessings and prepare themselves well. So, yeah, the core program, as we call it, the core program, Marriage Prep for Singles, has really been the thing that has made me most proud in my whole life to be a part of. Truly giving me a space that I can invest my energy in the right way and connect to people has been something so special and so valuable for me.
Yeah, and valuable for many other people, I believe, who have joined the program, and it's evolving. And it gave us, I mean, that has put us in a position now where we've had to categorize and minimize the offerings that we have. So that is very clear, because we started creating a ton of programs. But through you, we realized, okay, marriage prep, we have Ascend, which is porn recovery, and then we'll have Radiance, which is, you know, how to have a heavenly intimacy-centered marriage. So it really helped. It was very clarifying to have you, and I think it's a great program. I wanted to unpack something, because I was in attendance for most of the summit. I attended the lion's share of a one-hour session in Japanese, which was a bunch of gobbledygook to me because I don't speak Japanese, but it was entertaining nonetheless. But I did catch yours as well, you and your elder sister, as you mentioned. And there is a bit of business there that came up in the podcast that I was very curious about, because I did not know this about you, but that you were in somewhat of a dire straits not too long ago, a year ago or so. So do you mind talking about that in this as well?
I mean, I've already addressed the whole world with this, so I might as well.
Okay, yeah, let's unpack that. So you were really on the brink of considering transitioning to the next world, to put it, I don't know, diplomatically. You were contemplating suicide about a year ago. So we're in April now. Is it about this, like, spring of 2023?
So this would have been September last year, I think. So I just come back from the pilgrimage, and I had all this inspiration in my heart. I had met True Mother. I had had a truly incredible experience. And then I had a relapse. There was some confusing moments in my life. I was having an issue with some relationships around me, like with friends, and I relapsed. And I had a really good streak before, and I felt like I was doing the right thing. I was, you know, working with High Noon now. I was really like, I knew what the right thing to do was, and I really had a lot of hope and desire. Kind of for the first time in my life, I felt happy. And then it all crashed as soon as I was stressed and I had a a low moment. I relapsed and it just felt terrible. It felt like, well, I've just thrown away the last 4 or 5 months of my hard work and dedication to High Noon. And it felt like I had, like all of that had just disappeared. And what was left was me in the state of loneliness and darkness just by myself, and I relapsed. And I know it's a little bit dramatic, but I don't know. I just, at the time, it felt really bad. And it felt like, well, what's the point then? If I'm going to just keep relapsing, you know, it doesn't matter how much work I put into myself. I'm just going to, maybe I'm just fundamentally not strong enough, you know, to be a good person. Maybe sure. I'm not, yeah, maybe that I can't be that person I want to be. And I also, you know, I was aware that whenever I struggled, that the people around me who knew about my struggles, that it would be hard for them too. You know, my dad, he loves me so much, and our communication is maybe not the easiest because, you know, maybe because, you know, because of his upbringing, but, you know, he really loves me, even if our communication isn't the best. And so, but I knew that whenever I would struggle with my integrity, that he would personally blame himself, and that he would want to be a better father for me and want to be there to support. But I saw that my issues was really hurting my father and my mother as well. And it just felt like I was being this painful burden for them, that I was really hurting them with my dysfunctional, you know, my dysfunctional being, my bad qualities, right? And so, yeah, I was in this relapse state one evening, and I just was feeling really crap. And in that moment, I just kind of lost hope. I was like, you know what? I don't feel like I have the courage or the strength to keep going anymore. I think the world would be much better without me. I would just leave. And, you know, the world will keep trying to grow, but I don't think I can be a part of that. And I fully... yeah, I just fully planned out a whole suicidal plan, how I would just, you know, go to work as usual, but then I would just, you know, go find a tall building or something to jump off of. And it was, yeah, a moment where I couldn't see a way out. And yeah, it was quite the scary thing about it was I felt so numb, you know, I didn't feel much emotion. I just felt this kind of, I was underwater. I was under this deep depression and I couldn't do anything about it. So I guess fast forward to the next morning and, you know, kind of contemplating as I woke up, this could probably be my last morning alive on this earth. And then going to leave the house, I just had this sudden impulse to go talk to my mother. And so I did. I went up to her room and I said, you know, hello, I need to talk to you. And, in that moment, I started opening up about the fact that I had relapsed and I was having these suicidal thoughts. And then I just broke down crying and I just couldn't stop. And in that moment, she just came and she held me. She just wrapped her arms around me and just held me for a solid 20, 25 minutes. And all I did was cry and get all my emotion out. And she just held me. And that was a moment where I really felt God's love. That no matter what you do in life, no matter what mistakes you make, everyone is worthy of God's love. And yeah, that really, it didn't fix all of my problems, but it was a massive turning point where suddenly I was filled up with life and I had the strength to keep on going because I had my parents' love in that moment.
Yeah. Wow, that's unbelievable. And it also harkens back to what you said earlier, which is that everything is somehow related to sex, right? That slipping and going back and reverting back into old habits to do with porn masturbation could put you in a position of feeling so low and so worthless, right? That's pretty bananas, but quite common, right? That our self-worth is connected to our self-control, I said self-control as I dropped my mic. No control. Holy moly, yeah, that's really intense. And then, so since then, how have you been building yourself back up? Because this is not, maybe not everybody deals with that level of depression, or maybe it doesn't manifest their anger or frustration or self-loathing doesn't manifest in the same way, but low feelings and then building yourself back up into a stable, healthy person, it follows a common narrative. So what was it that allowed you to be kind of more stable, to rebuild yourself after such a kind of intense bout?
Four things jump up into my mind at once. So
okay.
I would say one of them is the fact that I was involved with the core program in High Noon, and that I had the solution for all of my problems right in front of me. And in fact, I was involved, was connection. I realized that all of my struggles was because I was disconnecting from God and from others, and that what I needed in my life was true connection, experiencing true love with my brothers and sisters, and working on the five Indian virtues. And what felt special was the more I put into the core program, and the more I saw how the brothers and sisters who participated were having wonderful experiences, the more I felt like, wow, God actually has a plan for me. God is using me to support others, and this feels right. This feels amazing. I sometimes I wake up and I still can't quite believe that I'm in the situation where I'm able to support my community on this large scale. We have members from Africa and South America and Europe who are joining our programs, Americans as well, right? And like, it just feels amazing to be a part of these people's growth, as we are all aiming for the same thing, right? We all want to get blessed. And that was the second point I wanted to make, was that I truly desire to have a wonderful marriage and to create a wonderful family. That's really my big goal. I don't really care how much money I make in my life or if people even remember me when I die, but what I do care about is the legacy I will continue, and the love I will experience for future family. So that's the second thing. The third thing is developing a mindset of gratitude, that every day I try to live as if that might be my last day, and not from a negative perspective, like, oh, I might die tomorrow, but like, I just truly am grateful for everything around me. I'm grateful for the fact that I have loving parents, that I'm in a house that is secure, that I'm in a nation that is not at war, I was in Poland, and there are Ukrainian members who are in the Polish community at the moment, and they had to leave their homes because they are, under attack from another nation. So I'm just truly grateful that I'm in a safer environment. And I can't actually remember what my fourth point was going to be, but basically those are my main ones.
Being on this podcast,
a reason to be alive. Yeah.
Yeah, those are beautiful. Thank you. And so now you're actually, you've been giving talks. I mean, bringing up Poland, you willed through your will and your chutzpah, through your, I mean, it only happened really because you made it happen, was the United Kingdom event in your own community, right? How's that going now that you are becoming the face of this organization as well? You're representing us. We are entrusting you with an amplified device known as a microphone to speak High Noon's message into.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I just want to start off by saying that High Noon for me has been life-changing. And I really see High Noon as the solution for everything, you know? I'm going to go there and say that High Noon as an organization are doing the work that has been so desperately needed in our world for so long. And I truly see that. Tonogok will come out of High Noon's work and dedication. I'm not casting aside the rest of our movement, you know, UPF, YASP, you know, Family Federation, we're all doing our parts, right? And every person, every organization has a crucial part to play. You know, we're not necessarily making deals with the presidents of each nation, right? But we're going deep into the core of families, right? Of sexuality and addressing the core issue, but also showing the core solution as well. We're showing how easy it can be to go from an addicted slave to yourself to becoming a radiant individual and then a radiant family as well. So that for me is so clear. So yeah, being able to tour around Europe now, shout out to my dear friends Andranik and Sandra. They are a wonderful couple, and I'm so glad you've appointed Andranik as the chapter leader for Europe. He's truly the right man for the job. He's Frodo, I'm Samwise Gamgee. I feel like I'm his supporter. You know, he's
You're really his chubby assistant.
Yeah, he's the real protagonist of the story, I feel, and I just want to support him as much as I can. And he and Sandra are a beautiful couple, and I look up to them. But yeah, as you said, UK event, I really wanted to bring High Noon back to UK, where it all started for me. And that was a meaningful experience. I didn't necessarily get the number of people I wanted, but I realized that numbers don't really matter if the quality is good. And I felt like the quality was good. And that was a big victory in my mind. I was happy to have my good friend Benji with me as well there in UK. He's been a big part of my life as well. A true older brother figure, as well as Samara and Araceli, who, you know, as the oldest in my family, it's so lovely to have older brothers and sisters who I know really care for me, and working with them is a joy. But yeah, also just came back from Poland. That was amazing. Recorded the 24-hour podcast there as well. And then we're going to Prague this weekend. So,
oh wow.
Yeah. So yeah, truly, truly trying to bring the High Noon lifestyle to our continent.
So then what's the plan? Like, we got to start wrapping up, because we are past an hour. I was going to try to find a metaphor, but I couldn't. We're in wrapping up territory, but I wanted to kind of, one thing that you mentioned that you're really driven by are the five High Noon virtues. So, and one thing that you just said is that essentially High Noon's going to change the world. So any last words in terms of how you believe that High Noon's going to change the world? And I'm guessing that it has something to do with the five High Noon virtues.
Yeah. So I think for everyone listening to this, whether you've been, whether you've been following this podcast from the beginning, or you're only just, you know, handpicking specific episodes to inspire your life, I think you know already pretty well what the virtues are, the five High Noon virtues. But I truly believe that these virtues are going to be fundamental for creating individuals who are not only going to live their lives well, but they will truly radiate a fantastic energy that can influence those around them. So those people who are courageous, those people who are honest, those people who are able to give and receive grace, who are accountable, those people who truly embody integrity, they are going to be the people who are going to create Chonoguk, because they are already creating it inside themselves and in their families, and in their support groups, in their friendships. And I really see it as like a step-by-step basis. So as soon as you have Chonoguk within your family, you can spread that to the rest of your family, your aunts, your uncles, your grandparents, your cousins, and then you can focus on the community. And once your community embodies Hainin, embodies Chonokuk, then the nation. And then after the nation, it's the world, it's the cosmos. It just keeps going and going and going.
Mm.
But it's as simple as looking in ourselves and realizing that we can always improve and we can grow closer to God. And that I know many people who they are struggling to find hope in themselves. And I think my own story about suicidal thoughts and that kind of thing, that's not even the worst of it. There are some people who have had far worse stories than I have, and had far, far more difficult struggles than I have. I'm fully aware of that. But I just want everyone to know that you are all worthy of God's love, and you're all capable of creating Chonoguk. You just have to believe, you know, and you have to take the steps. You have to be courageous. You have to connect to people, practice honesty, accountability, all these things. And receiving grace. I had to learn that. I had to learn how to receive grace. And I feel like I'm still not perfect there. I need to work on being better at receiving grace.
I think all of
but
us.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, like all of us. But yeah, man, I also just want to thank you so much for, and the Wolfenbergers and everyone for providing this incredible organization and giving hope in my life. And I guess just to wrap up, I just want to say that I will commit my life to carrying on this great work, and I really want to support you guys. So yeah, you can count me in trying to create Chonoguk.
Already counted here. Your name is on the list for the first person to create online courses for cosmic level peace. Okay, we're gonna have to really work with the metaverse on that one, but we will figure it out. And yeah, we love having you, man. It's you're a great addition. Yeah, fresh, vibrant energy, and you are an incredibly warm and splendid person to work with. So happy to have you on board, and I know Andronic's loving working with you. It's like, you know, he's a very slow-paced, methodical person. He's further east in Europe, right? So he's very, you know, like a Mercedes, just really reliable. And then you're like a puppy dog, and you have like that energy, and you're so it's great. Mercedes and a puppy dog. I can't wait to see the adventures that you guys go on. It's like a kid's story. And
he
then
drives
Sandra.
A Jaguar. He drives a Jaguar, so he's that kind
see
of
what
guy.
I'm saying? See yes. what I'm saying? So yeah, thank you so much for first of all for sharing so deeply and sincerely, candidly, and also yeah, I can't wait to see what comes from you. You're a powerful person who's finding yourself in this world, and I'm so glad you stuck around. So glad you have wonderful parents who really fight for you and nurture it. Like to have a mom who just lets you cry into them for 25 minutes is, if we all had that, I think we'd have world peace, to be honest, right? So yeah, you come from a great legacy of beautiful people, and yeah. So this will be part one. We'll check up on you later and see all the great things that come out of you in the future, okay?
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm happy to always share. And yeah, I love talking to you too. You're a great man, Andrew. Thanks, a big inspiration buddy. In my life.
Tell your friends. All right. Thanks, guys. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you. When we live in your house, next time we live in your house, we'll talk to you. Bye.
Yeah, God bless.
Hey, did you know that our team wants to do more events? Well, if you want to bring the High Noon message to your community or group, then let us know and we'll try to work something out. There's a simple application that you can fill out right now at highnoon.org/invite, and one of our team members will get back to you to see what's possible. That's highnoon.org/invite. All right, see you in the next episode.